Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Let's see if Bodie can keep the team alive. Here's the pitch on the way. A swing and a miss, strike three, and this ball game is over. Hader strikes out Bodie. Cubs score twice, leave one, but the final, Milwaukee 6, Cubs 3.
Broken bat roller. Throw to second, and it hits the runner. Here comes Madrigal, and they win it. Wow, the White Sox win it 4-3.
But no bulls came back on defense, and Brandt, for a second, dribbled right up to the basket. Yeah, could have shot it if he wanted to.
Yes, he could have. And so that's going to do it. 101-90, Memphis beating the Bulls in Memphis, Tennessee. So the Bulls go 5 of 31 from three-point range, missing their last 15 attempts.
Kalnuk sends Doc ahead. 3-on-2 here. Doc takes a look. Kalnuk to the net. Here's a chance for Hagley. Score! Brandon Hagel. Hawks win! Hawks win! The Hawks on a 3-on-2 rush. Get a good pass to Brandon Hagel, who snapped it home. And the Blackhawks win it.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Our thanks to the fine folks at WSCR, givers, not takers, on the Cubs' final call. NBC Sports Chicago, thank you for the White Sox. And our sister station, WBBM 780, for the Bulls. NBC Sports Chicago, again, for the Blackhawks. So a lot of us and a lot of them and a lot of thanks and a lot of results, a couple good ones and a couple bad ones. That's the way you got to break it down.
Fun night, yeah. It was definitely fun to see Nick Madrigal celebrating the game-winning run, Brandon Hagel celebrating the game-winning goal in overtime. I kind of like watching hockey overtime. I've come to it lately, but 3-on-3 is a lot of fun. It's exciting. So you got the Hawks and the Sox celebrating. You've got the Cubs and the Bulls, both kind of suffering from the same problems. You know, when you look at the Cubs and the Bulls similarities, you know, the Bulls were 5-for-31 behind the arc. That's 0.161. That's 16%. That's not even as good as the Cubs were as a collective team batting average of 164. So both teams, the numbers tell the story.
Yeah. I got to tell you, you know, I'm really pleased that the Blackhawks are doing some, making some moves, doing some things. I'm pleased that the Bulls made some moves. I'm not pleased that it hasn't worked out. I'm pleased that the White Sox are back to 500 and ready to hopefully make some sort of a move. I'm really pleased that that they're going to get Tim Anderson back for Thursday's game and hopefully moving forward. And I think Tim will be eager to make a big impact. I don't know how I feel about the Cubs right now. I think it's really hard. You know, I spent a lot of time earlier in the program defending Javi Baez, which is almost an indefensible position to have because I think everybody from the naked eye, it looks awful. And then when you dig into the numbers, you realize it's not as bad as some other Cubs, which is a terrible way of putting – I almost called it success, but, I mean, comparative – less awful is not really success. And I think that the one thing we've learned from this Cubs season, we didn't think the pitching was going to be great. We thought the bullpen was going to be a problem, but we were really hoping that they somehow would hit better than they have, that the offense wouldn't be as bad as it's been. And I think that the takeaway here, when you see that four runs is sort of the tipping point for success, it doesn't seem like you're asking for that much, frankly, David. And that's painful to see them two games below 500 at this point in the season.
You just the margin for error is too thin. I mean, because you have too many other question marks on your roster, in your starting rotation. An example last night, you know, it's when you have, you know, Alzolay was really pitching pretty well. And then you look at how much they needed to play. Every decision made behind him was important, and it's such a small margin for error. So he, you know, he gives up three runs and five and a third, and that should be ideally pretty good for a fifth starter trying to establish himself. And it wasn't good enough because the Cubs were stuck on one run for so long, the Chris Bryant home run, the two runs that came later, but Chafin blew, you know, any chance of that mattering. And it is frustrating because in a season where we all agreed on one thing about the Cubs, they had to get off to a good start. They had to get off to a good start. And certainly 10 games does not an early season make. You still wanted more positive signs to emerge in the first 10 games offensively because of all the concerns. You knew the bullpen was going to be a little bit shaky just because you didn't have as many proven players down there. You figured the rotation you would have to piece together with some veterans that would be maybe up, maybe down, but you felt good. Offense couldn't be broken, and the offense is.
And I think that element of it, David, is why, you know, we've tried to put our lineups together. We've tried to throw a few bones to David Ross. Just try something. Try anything. You can't, you know, keep going into this thing without making changes because it's not working. And the idea that somehow it's just going to start clicking, I don't know, man. Maybe when you look at Chris Bryant, you say, hey, you know, he's starting to get it. It's starting to fall for him. It'll happen for everyone. But it's been a collective disappointment. It's been a lot of these guys that you thought needed to have big years, and you thought that maybe the urgency of that would create bigger years, and it hasn't. And I get it. It's, you know, we're very early in the season. We're just getting going. But, my God, you can't fall into a big hole. We had talked about the urgency of winning early and how important that was for keeping the group together and maybe trying to get something done here. And even though they won the division a year ago, boy, they don't look like a division winner this year. That, not thus far anyway.
Well, you want to take a step back. The 35,000-foot view of the way somebody may interpret what's going on here is that when you structure your team and you put so many key players in what we have referred to contract years, right? They're contract years for Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo. You're not unable to secure these guys long-term, so you create this sense of urgency. Now, that may be great if you're a football team. It may be great if you're a hockey team. I don't know that baseball players respond as well to urgency. It just isn't part of the makeup, right? It just doesn't seem to be – you know, it's 162 game season. Yeah. So the Cubs have structured this season, and I don't want to say it's almost designed to fail, but these struggles are, if you look at the numbers, they're historically bad, and this is a season where they needed to get off to a good start. People have all talked about nothing else, and you wonder if that has created this sort of anxiety that increases the urgency, or does the urgency increase the anxiety?
It's interesting because I think in baseball we know that you're going to fail, you know, if you can only fail twice for every three attempts, you're going to wind up in the Hall of Fame, right? You're going to put up unbelievable numbers. So you're going to fail more than you're going to succeed. And if you add this element of kind of pressurizing that situation, I think for some people that might bring out the best in you. But for other people, it's going to bring out the worst. And I love, you know, we should have talked more to LeMond about the column he wrote with Jose Abreu and his advice to the White Sox, because I think that advice applies to the Cubs, which is you have to have confidence in yourself. That is, if you have self-confidence And I'm not saying they don't, but as you fail, you still have to believe in what you do, and you have to have things that you fall back on that you do. What you can't do is get inside your own head and pressure yourself. I got to get this done. I got to get this done. That doesn't work for anyone. And I think that I've seen more of that in some of these at-bats than I care to admit. I don't think they're talking about it, but it's an omnipresent issue, David. It's got to be something that's on their minds as much as it's on everyone else's mind.
Absolutely. And I think that's the kind of in-between phase that they are at mentally that Ron Coomer alluded to, because things have changed since this core, you know, burst onto the scene, if you will, or since they carried the Cubs to all the success that they had. You know, the baseball has changed, how they're getting pitched and what, you know, their swing type has changed, and what the way they're what works for pitchers and the way they're attacking, and the launch angle thing is something of the past, and you wonder if that approach, if they've been able to adapt and adjust. They clearly haven't. And so then you start to think more and react less, and that's not good for any athlete in any sport. And so you see the Cubs now have they look like a team that you can see them thinking and almost being deliberate, and nothing's happening. And so that's why they find themselves a remarkable statistic. Ed Hart unearthed this one, but it bears repeating. There's been no 10-game stretch in Cubs history since 1901 where they've had fewer hits than they do right now with 49. Think about that. Of all the bad Cub teams you've seen, of all the teams that without Baez and Bryant and Rizzo or players of that caliber, this is the most futile offensive team ever in a 10-game stretch in terms of hits.
Good God. Like, Billy Williams would have that many hits in 10 games himself. That's just insane. Seriously.
It is.
That's just outrageous. And you know, I wonder how much the collective comes into play. Is it as simple as getting, you know, I think two guys getting hot changes everything. But how do you get through this if you have this collective kind of slump, how do you get through it? I mean, it's great to see Chris Bryant hit a home run yesterday.
It is.
But
yeah.
You're going to win 1-0? I mean, Edward Alzolay pitched great for 5 innings, but he ran into trouble in the 6th.
You can't.
How are you going to overcome that?
No margin for error. And Mully, I thought if you were going to wave the flag defending any player today, it might be Chris Bryant, only because I think he is off to a start that you could live with, right? I think that his approach and his success, his numbers aren't terrible, and he hits another home run last night, so you could see why maybe you could live with that if other people around him were hitting. But I just wonder, you know, this team so badly needs a spark. And I know you were sort of half kidding yesterday, but there's some truth to it. Like, David Ross needs to be thrown out of a game. Somebody needs to do something that changes, you know, I'm not suggesting spraying sage like Liam Hendricks, but something needs to be the proverbial change the air in the room, change the context of each game. The mood needs lightened somehow. I don't know if it's something how you script that or if you even can, but this Cub team desperately needs something to be different in terms of the mix.
They need a win. I mean, you know, they need a win, put together a win. You're facing a good pitcher, get a win, and then win a series. It's as simple as that. It is not like you're not going to be able to suddenly, you know, start knocking the ball everywhere. Just win a game, win one game, and then stack a win or two. And then everything will feel different. It'll feel, you know, I believe Liam Hendricks said after the tarot card reader, he felt lighter. That's what you need. You need to feel lighter. You need to have that feeling like some of your troubles have disappeared or dissipated, or I used to go to confession. It just makes the soul work, right? I haven't really been doing a lot of in-person things, so I'm confessing to you that I haven't been to confession in a while. But I think it's a wonderful tool to be able to kind of, you know, I've been holding this back. I just want to, you know, expunge it and let's let it drift off into the universe and I'll, you know, I'll do whatever penance I must. I like that kind of thing. I like feeling lighter and feeling less stressed out. And I think that that happens just by winning a game and then winning the second game. If you can somehow get through a series, because when you're not hitting and when things are going wrong, it feels like, good God, it feels like there's like almost a tidal wave hitting you or there's an avalanche coming and you just don't know how to get out of the way. It's just it's rough. So you got to start with the basics and just kind of win an inning. It, you know, it's real simple and stupid, but that's all you can do.
Just in case, do you know any tarot card readers in Wrigleyville? You know anybody that we
I have a great
suggest?
I have a great tarot card joke. Unfortunately, it's more of like an in-person type thing. So maybe when we're in the studio on Friday,
okay.
I can tell you a tarot card joke and see if you
can't
like
wait.
It.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Something to look forward to. All right, and another thing to look forward to is Zach Zaidman.
Yes.
We're going to bring in the ginger-haired genius and talk it over with him. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Zach Zaidman.
We're live on the radio.
Cubs radio pregame and postgame host.
Here's the pitch, swung on and hit to deep center field. Way back, Duggar at the wall, leaps, it's gone. A home run for Chris Bryant.
Former Bears radio sideline reporter.
Down here with Jay Cutler. What were you guys trying to do on that play to Martellus Bennett?
I'm trying to score.
A guy with a great head of hair.
And what color would your hair be, Zach?
Luscious red locks, Pat. Thank you so much for asking. It's real and it's spectacular. Some would refer to it as Syracuse orange.
Zach Zaidman.
The ginger-haired genius. He was a hit yesterday, right, guys?
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, we love talking to our buddy Zach Zaidman, brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan. Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Good morning, Zach. How are you?
Love that
open. Good morning, guys. You know how sometimes you need to go through the analytics, dive into the numbers to figure out what's wrong with a team?
Yeah.
You don't need to do that when you're watching the Cubs. The answer stares you right in front of the face. They swing and miss way too much. If you don't hit, very tough to score. If you don't score, very tough to win.
And four runs, as we've learned, is the standard. You just need four runs, which I guess is asking a lot, but it seems like you get four runs, you win. You don't get the four runs, you lose. That's what we've learned in this early part of the season.
Yeah, the Cubs averaging just 2.9 runs per game, in large part because they only have 49 hits through 10 games. And according to Cubs historian Ed Hartig, that's the fewest number of hits over any 10-game stretch for the Cubs dating back to 1901. The previous low for a 10-game stretch, 51 hits in September of 1968 during a 10-game period. So that gives you an idea of some of the issues. And then the Cubs have a strikeout rate of nearly 30%. They've struck out 100 times through 10 games. So they're last in Major League Baseball in batting average with a 164 average. That's 28 points lower than the next closest team, the San Francisco Giants, the only other team in baseball at this point with a batting average as a team below 200. So essentially, it's that simple. You got to fix the offense. And I think Theo Epstein referred to it as a broken offense last year, when the Cubs were 27th in batting average during the abbreviated 2020 season. Until they figure that out, we're going to have the same conversation over and over and over again.
Yeah, and I wonder, we sound surprised. We shouldn't be, because these true outcome guys are the way this Cub team has been structured. This is the roster they put together on purpose. They kept these guys together for one last hurrah, perhaps. Zach, if you are going to shake things up, if you were going to change anything about the personnel or the lineup that is at your disposal, would you consider bringing up Nico Hoerner to be a guy that gives you something at the top of the order? Would you consider moving people down in the batting order like a Javi or whoever else? You've got to do something, right?
You know what's interesting, David, and you bring up some great points. The guys that were red hot during Cactus League play have been extremely cold to start the regular season. You know, Nico Hoerner was one of the hottest guys in the spring. Same thing with David Bodie. I think Bodie is hitting below 100 now after yesterday's game. Jock Peterson was putting up triple crown-like numbers in Cactus League action, and he's gotten off to a slow start, a 129 batting average. And the two guys that were as cold as could be during the spring have been the Cubs' hottest hitters to start the year, Chris Bryant and Javi Baez. Bryant's the only Cub with an OPS over 1,000. And OPS basically just tests your ability to get on base and hit for power. So if you're anywhere around 1,000 with an OPS, that's extremely good, and Chris Bryant is there. But yeah, I just think you can't panic 10 games in. You know, I didn't quite know what to make of the numbers last year because we were talking about just 60 games. But the fact that it's continued into this season, I think that's why there might be a little bit more panic outside of the clubhouse than usual, because it looks like nothing has changed from last year where they got bounced early out of the playoffs because of the inability to hit. I don't believe, to answer your question about Hoerner, I don't believe one guy can automatically change everything that we've seen so far. I also don't think it's smart to panic after 10 games, even though it seems like we've been watching these issues a lot longer than just 10 games. I think you kind of have to let it play out a little bit before you start making these major moves.
And I was defending Javi today because I think I understand how, to the naked eye, the 17 strikeouts, first of all, that's too many, but the 17 strikeouts, it looks like there's one of two things that could happen. He could corkscrew himself actually into the ground, and then they would have to figure out how to, you know, have three men push him around and try to pull him out, or he could
now,
injure
Molly,
himself.
Now, Molly, would you consider that Javi being Javi if that actually happened during the game?
I think it would be extraordinary. I think it's a cartoon type of response to the way that he swings, but there is the real possibility that he could Tatis Jr. himself. He could actually injure himself with that swing because it's so violent. But his numbers, at least comparatively, are better than other guys on this team. It's just the 17 strikeouts kind of make everyone think that he'll literally swing at anything. And guess what? He sometimes will swing at anything, and he'll golf ball a home run. But I think that he is a guy that it's easy to pick on because he looks like he's having no success, when in reality he's got a few homers and he's probably doing better than other guys on the team.
Yeah, he's actually having a very good road trip, and he struggled for most of the game yesterday until he had that two-run double in the ninth inning, and he's coming off a really good series that he had in Pittsburgh. I said this to you before the start of the season when we had all the questions about the Cubs starting rotation and Craig Kimbrel, and I said, ultimately, you will judge the success or failure of the 2021 Cubs by the core four and their ability to hit. Ultimately, and nothing has changed over the last 3 years, the success of the Cubs will be due in large part to Bryant, Baez, Rizzo, and Contreras. And Baez is hitting at 243, starting to heat up. Contreras has struggled mightily to begin the season, 214 batting average. Anthony Rizzo is mired in a big slump to start the year at 118. Traditionally, he's a slow starter and then eventually gets back into it. That's why you don't want to panic 10 games in. But I understand why there's a lot of frustration when you watch the Cubs. I mean, it's not as though the opposing pitchers that they faced so far this season, it's not like you're looking at Cy Young, Nolan Ryan, and Greg Maddux. You know, you're looking at guys like Tyler Anderson and Mitch Keller and JT Brubaker. So I think that's where you kind of scratch your head a little bit, but you just kind of have to let them play out of it. I think what's been encouraging is the starting staff has looked good. The bullpen, I know Chafin had a rough night last night, but for the most part, the bullpen has been much better than you thought, especially at the back end with Kimbrel. So now it's about starting to see this team do the things that you know they're capable of doing, but they haven't done it. This is a home run hitting team that has not hit home runs. And when they don't hit home runs, it looks like there's no hope in terms of being able to provide much offense because they don't have the ability to do other things to manufacture runs. They have to slug. And when they don't slug, it looks like they don't care and they're not giving full effort. That's not the case. It just so happens that everyone seems to be struggling at the same time, with the exception of Chris Bryant.
Well, it gets no easier tonight against Woodruff. I mean, we have seen already what he can do to this Cubs lineup. I just wonder, you mentioned Contreras as part of the core four, and I agree that he deserves that designation. Where do you think his head is at against the Brewers tonight? And because they, of all the teams that they face, have been able to, you know, maybe get inside his head by going through his body, because they have hit him more often. There's that rate. And you know what has happened lately. That goes without saying. Where is his head at, Zach, and what are the hopes of, you know, that he finds his groove sooner rather than later?
I don't think it's just the Brewers, David. If you go back to last season, no player in Major League Baseball has been hit more than Wilson Contreras. So I think that plays a little bit of a role in it as well. And I mean, he's taken a lot of shots, not just as a batter, but also behind the plate as well this season. I just think it comes down to the Cubs having to adjust to the way Major League Baseball has adjusted to them. It's clear that over the first 3 years of this golden era of Cubs baseball, they slugged with the best teams in baseball. And then there's been a change in the way opposing pitchers have approached the Cubs. And they're not going to get those fastballs until they prove that they can make you pay with the breaking stuff. So until the Cubs adjust to that, and this is a team thing, it's not just one player. Until the Cubs make opponents pay for not throwing them fastballs in the zone, then there's no reason to switch things up. And I think ultimately, how do you do that? Well, number one, we talked a lot at the beginning of the year about the Cubs having to be more patient at the plate. I think you have to be a little bit more aggressive at the plate. So when you get into hitters' counts, 2-0, 3-0, 3-1, you have to be aggressive at the plate, because you know you're going to see a good pitch. You can't miss those pitches. I think it's an approach that has to change, and they're trying to do that. But unfortunately, you know, the way the numbers look over the first 10 games, it makes you think that there aren't adjustments being made.
Some scary stuff kind of off the field. Craig Driver, we know over the weekend, tested positive, and obviously Chris Young tested positive for COVID-19. And as a result, with Chris Young, the bullpen coach, you have Brandon Workman and Jason Adam and Dan Winkler are now on the 10-day DL. They can come back sooner, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, if they get three positive tests.
Correct.
Negative tests. But that kind of is very interruptive, and that's something that the Cubs avoided a year ago. Is there anything different? We know the White Sox claim to have 90% of their traveling party already vaccinated. Why hasn't that happened with the Cubs? Will that happen with the Cubs?
I think that David Ross said that the goal is to get to 100%, so we'll see if eventually you can get there.
But 85 is when they lift
the threshold, some of those, gets relaxed,
yes,
a little bit.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, I think that. This is a team firsthand, and you guys know better than most. When you interviewed Tommy Hotovy before the start of last season, and he went into great detail, the Cubs pitching coach, about his battles prior to the start of the season with COVID-19, and you're talking about a guy in his 30s in great shape who had a really serious bout with COVID-19. This group, more than most, they understand just the seriousness of COVID-19. But I think we live in a world where the numbers are going up. You know, that just because guys wear a baseball uniform doesn't make them any different than the rest of us. And I think it's very difficult to navigate the entire season with all the travel that guys do and everything that you're exposed to. It's very difficult to go through this without positive cases. And that's what the Cubs are going through right now. But, you know, in listening to the players yesterday and David Ross, they were saying that, you know, you focus in on baseball when it's time to focus in on baseball. But let's be honest, if you're human beings and you know that someone in your tight traveling party has tested positive, and now there's another person that's tested positive. That has to play a role psychologically in your ability to perform your job at a high level. So I don't know how that the Cardinals were able to get through it last year. The Marlins were too after the early season COVID cases that they had, and they eventually made the playoffs. This is a full 162. We've already seen the Nationals have to go through some of these issues. I just think that if you're going to try and play a full season of professional sports, we saw it in football, you're going to have to find a way to overcome these issues. And this is why you go through the testing that they go through. And hopefully you catch up from a vaccination standpoint that as the season goes on, your play does not get interrupted by this kind of stuff.
Great stuff, Zach. Always a joy to talk to you, buddy.
Thanks,
Take
Zach.
Care, guys.
Good work.
Always. We love Zach. He's the ginger hair genius, for God's sake. Who wouldn't love
I love Zach's genius. Pregame tonight on the Score, and the way he sets the context for every game. It's must listen. It's good stuff.
No question about it. And we're going to bring in another must listen. Mike Florio will join us next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
He got game! He get better and better! He got better! He got big beat!
NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. We love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio, brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Mike.
Great. How are you guys today?
You know, we're fired up, and I think there's a lot of reasons. It is close to the draft. We're only a couple of weeks from Thursday, and there's all sorts of quarterback talk in Atlanta. Are they going to take a quarterback? We know they're going 1-2-3. Are they going to go 1-2-3-4? Are they going to trade that pick? Who's going to move up? I think that it's now that it's getting closer, it's getting more exciting.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. It could go 1-2-3-4-5. It's never gone more than 1-2-3. That was 1999. It was Tim Couch, Donovan McNabb, and Achille Smith. So one out of three worked out. But you know, I really do think that this push for quarterbacks comes from the fact that obviously the quarterback position is so important, but younger quarterbacks are doing better than they've done in the past. And also, when you get that franchise guy, whoever it is, whenever you get him, you've got him for more than 10 years, more than 15 years. Maybe you have him for up to 20 years by the time it's all said and done. I think that's huge, and I think that's why we're seeing this push toward possibly overdrafting quarterbacks, because you scratch off that lottery ticket and it says franchise quarterback, you're good to go.
So, Mike, when you look at the pro days, tomorrow it seems Justin Fields will have his second workout in Columbus. Trey Lance will be the last one, I think, next Monday. And there seems to be a lot of intrigue over where the Patriots will be and who they will be going to watch, and also the 49ers, who have committed to watching Justin Fields. You wonder about their big move up, the Justin Fields versus Mac Jones debate. What is the latest in terms of the drama, and how important are the Patriots' intentions when you're looking at their ability to move up and maybe get their guy?
Well, I think it's critical, but you have to ask yourself first and foremost, what is their plan? Are they trying to win this year? Are they trying to build for the future? When you see everything they've done in free agency, you can look at it two ways. You can say, hey, they've addressed a lot of their needs in free agency, so they can go ahead and draft a quarterback if a quarterback's around, or they could move up if they want to invest the capital. But they haven't drafted a quarterback in round one since Drew Bledsoe in 1993. I can understand why they're being coy, because they're sitting at 15. What amazes me about the 49ers at 3, they've got no reason to hold cards close to the vest. They're getting whoever's left after Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. And I can't help but wonder how much of this dog and pony show is due diligence versus helping just create buzz, and it's PR, and people are talking about the 49ers when we otherwise wouldn't. At a certain point, you seem wishy-washy and you seem like you moved up to number three without a clear plan. So there's a balance there to be struck. I assume that when they went up there, they had a guy that they really wanted. They gave up three first-round picks and a third-round pick to get a guy at three. And the more they study it and the more flexible they seem, it's like, well, they didn't trade up just to get a guy. They traded up to get the ability to pick one out of multiple guys. And I know they got to do their work, but there is a balance between being decisive and having a plan versus, well, I don't know, we'll figure it out when the first night of the draft rolls around.
Mike, there was news yesterday with the Britt Reid situation, the former linebackers coach who was fired by Kansas City, Andy Reid's son. We know before the Super Bowl, he was in a car accident. He was drinking and driving. He's been charged with felony drinking and driving. And there was a five-year-old girl, Ariel Young, who suffered a catastrophic brain injury, cannot walk or talk. And I think the Kansas City Star reported that she is currently being fed through a tube, to put that in perspective. So this guy facing 7 years is not necessarily the tragedy of these events. But I saw that you wrote about Dan Wetzel's column and this idea that, was he drinking in the facility? Does the NFL have charged things to answer for in this case, because there's no booze allowed in the facility? He claimed he was at a tavern nearby, but that hasn't been investigated or looked at. What goes on here from a football perspective? And I would, you know, I would hope that the Chiefs, that the Reid family, that everybody would try to help Ariel Young.
Yeah, I think that there are questions that need to be answered, and the Chiefs so far have declined to do anything beyond supplement their initial statement. What did they know? When did they know it? Was he drinking in the facility? Were others actively involved in the consumption? Did they know he was doing it? Did they look the other way because it was the head coach's son? The league had extra monitors in there, too, for the final four teams for COVID-19 protocols. That's the thing. The NFL blanketing these facilities to make sure everyone is complying with all of the various requirements to stay on the right side of the pandemic, it enhances the available information that they would have regarding issues like whether and to what extent the league's policy against the presence of alcohol in team facilities possibly was being violated. So those are questions that will be asked within the confines of litigation. And it may be that the Chiefs and the NFL are steering clear because they know at some point they potentially are going to have liability, or at least have to defend themselves against an argument that they knew or should have known something that perhaps under Missouri law they had a duty to do. But the proximity of the practice facility to the scene of the crash, that raises questions. And they don't have to answer the questions. They don't owe us anything, but I think it's fair for people to say these questions need to be answered, not as a legal matter, but as a moral matter. How much alcohol was consumed in the facility? Were the rules broken? How did we get to a point where this guy was going 84 miles an hour nearly with a 0.113% blood alcohol content, a stone's throw, at least as far as car driving goes, from where he works every day 3 days before the Super Bowl? So it's an important issue. I can understand why the Chiefs wouldn't want to be candid about it because of the potential of facing litigation, but that doesn't make the question any less important just because they choose not to talk about it.
Mike, Julian Edelman yesterday failed the physical with the Patriots, announces a retirement later. He's 34 years old. So do you think it'll be week 8 or week 9 when he starts flirting with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Well, I immediately thought when the announcement was made, and it wasn't even an announcement, it was his presence on the daily transaction report showing he'd been released by the Patriots with a failed physical designation. And then the video comes out with Julian Edelman announcing his retirement from football. Look, how many guys have we seen retire from football who unretire from football? Just because he's retired now doesn't mean he's bound to that. He can come back and play. Tom Brady can work on the play. And there's something that I'm curious about. And I only mention this because the guy previously was popped for PEDs. Number one, previously popped, four-game suspension, 2018, the year that he ultimately became Super Bowl MVP after he served his four games. To the extent he's got a knee that's injured and isn't responding and is keeping him from playing, does he avoid the PED testing protocol if he's not on a team? And can he rehab his knee in creative ways that would otherwise get him suspended
That's
again
great.
And then come back? I mean, is that wrong to say that?
No. Not wrong.
It's genius. Yeah.
Would it surprise anybody if that's exactly what happens?
No, not at all. Not at all.
And again, I'm only saying this because he's got the past PED violation. It wouldn't even hit the radar screen. I don't understand what it is. In football, the stigma isn't there. And I think we are all just so conditioned to look at these guys and say, well, there's no way that they can maintain that kind of physique and suffer that kind of physical punishment without pharmaceutical enhancement. And we just don't care. We never have cared. And I think this is an example where people not really caring is going to benefit Julian Edelman, because I guarantee you very few people are going to be talking about his PED violation. The breathless discussion today is, does he belong in the Hall of Fame? And I can save everybody some time. He doesn't.
Agreed.
Mike, you're the best. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Mike. Good stuff. He's right.
That's fantastic.
He's great.
That's great. Did you see Belichick called him, one of the great competitors and et cetera?
Yes, I did see that.
I wonder if he'll say that if he winds up in Tampa.
No, he won't say that.
He'll say, I've always called him one of the great defectors. Okay, we're going to bring in.
This Hall of Fame stuff, too. I mean, come on. Let's stop that before it starts.
We're going to bring in Dan and Layla. We're going to get a chance to talk to our beloved colleagues next. Mully and Hawn, the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.